Welcome to the Blood Cancer Experience, a podcast by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. This podcast connects people affected by blood cancer to resources that inform, support, educate, and empower. When it comes to cancer, it's hard to navigate the unknown, and there are no easy answers. We're here to bring you the information you need to help make sense of every step of the blood cancer experience. My name is Charlotte Hall-Coates, and I'm the Community Services Manager for the Atlantic Region. Today on the show, I'm talking about diffuse large B-cell with Dr. Jacqueline Costello. Dr. Costello is an adult hematologist and clinical assistant professor at Memorial University in St. John's, Newfoundland, with a special interest in lymphoproliferative disorders. Thank you, Dr. Costello, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So to get us started, can you tell us what is diffuse large B-cell lymphoma?
Sure. So diffuse large B-cell lymphoma is exactly like the last word says. It's a lymphoma. And what lymphoma is a cancer of the lymphatic system, which is part of our body's germ-fighting or immune network. And then when we look at lymphomas, we talk about either non-Hodgkin's or Hodgkin's. And so diffuse large B-cell lymphoma is a very heterogeneous disease, but does follow into the category of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. There are many different types of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and when we think about diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, we put it into the category of an aggressive type, or a type that we would typically need to treat up front.
All right. So you talked a little bit about diffuse large B-cell as a type of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Can you tell us a little bit more about why it may differ from the other types of non-Hodgkin?
For sure. So when we think about non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in general, we categorize them as either indolent or slow growing, which may not require therapy up front. And then we categorize lymphomas as more aggressive, or lymphomas that would typically need treatment up front and would not typically fall under the wait and watch approach. So clinically, that's the big difference, that we would treat these diffuse large B-cell lymphomas up front because they fall into a more aggressive category. But again, it is a pretty heterogeneous disease, and the presentations can be quite different, even in diffuse large B-cell lymphoma in itself. Pathologically, they are different as well. When we look under a microscope, the lymphoma cells of a diffuse large B-cell lymphoma are typically a bit larger, and there are what we call morphologic or pathologic things that we would see that would distinguish them. So those are the two main kind of clinical presentation and pathologic differences. The treatments are quite different for the different types of non-Hodgkin lymphomas as well.
Okay, so what are sort of the main signs and symptoms you look out for diffuse large B-cell?
So because diffuse large B-cell lymphoma infiltrates the lymph nodes, but may also affect the liver, the spleen, other organs, and the bone marrow, typically the symptoms are of those affected lymph nodes or organs. So patients may develop pain because of a swollen lymph node. They may just see swollen lymph nodes at the surface of their skin, or they may see abdominal swelling or abdominal pain, as well as possible swelling of the legs. The other fairly common symptom of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma are categorized as B symptoms, and those are things such as fevers, weight loss, sweats at night, and fatigue. So patients with large cell lymphoma may present with one of those many B symptoms, or they may not. They can also present, like I said, with the swelling of the lymph node that is particularly enlarged in them, or just general fatigue, some patients will say they present as. So because this diffuse large B-cell lymphoma is so varied in the different even subtypes when we look under the microscope, the presentations are quite different.
So what diagnostic tools are used to actually diagnose diffuse large B-cell lymphoma?
Most patients will present with a lymph node that somebody can clinically find, or if not, on a CT scan or some other diagnostic imaging. And then the patients will undergo a core biopsy to biopsy the lymph node or mass that is enlarged in order to get the diagnosis. Otherwise, the types of tests that we can do to further classify or complete the staging of their diffuse large B-cell lymphoma would involve further CT scans or CAT scans, PET scans, also known as positron emission tomography scans, and some patients may require a bone marrow biopsy to further classify their staging.
So you mentioned different stages of diffuse large B-cell. Can you explain what those stages are?
For sure. So with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, we use something called the Ann Arbor staging system. And how that works is a staging system from stage 1, 2, 3, and 4, depending on where the lymph nodes are enlarged. So if there's one lymph node region that is enlarged, we would call that a stage 1. If there are two areas of lymph node enlargement on the same side of your diaphragm, which is the muscle that rests just below your lungs, we would call that a stage 2. If the lymph node involvement is enlarged on both sides of your diaphragm, so you would have a lymph node, for example, in your neck and then in your groin, we would consider that stage 3 disease. Stage 4 disease would involve other organs. We call that extra lymphatic involvement. So that could be involving, for example, the kidneys, the bowels, or the bone marrow. So anything outside of what we would call the typical lymphatic system, we would consider that stage 4 disease.
So what kind of treatment options are available for someone with diffuse large B-cell? And what kind of things should they consider when choosing the right treatment for themselves?
So that's a really good question and a really difficult one. Because this disease is quite heterogeneous and patients will have many different presentations. It also depends on the patient themselves, so their fitness, their comorbidities, their goals of care, and really what they are expecting for their quality of life through this treatment. So it's not a one-size-fits-all answer. For the most part, for standard risk diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, we would think about using chemotherapy only. And then for patients who do present with limited stage disease, we do offer combined modality therapy with a combination of chemotherapy and radiotherapy. And then when we talk about what are the different types of treatment options or what different chemo protocols there are quite a few, and it really depends on a number of things. For example, when a pathologist gives us the diagnosis, they use many different immunohistochemistry stains and epigenetics to help them tell us exactly what type of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma it is, and what aggressive features or not so aggressive features that the patient's lymphoma may have. And so that will really help steer us in what direction that we want to sit down and talk about treatment options for our patients. So some things you may have read for our patients about diffuse large B-cell lymphoma is protocols such as R-CHOP. So R-CHOP. So that's a combination of intravenous chemotherapy with prednisone pills. And then there are escalated therapies that are used as well. So you'll see a combination of different treatments you may read about, things like dose escalated EPOC-R, or even clinical trials, which may involve a lot of experimental agents. So because it is such a heterogeneous disease and there are so many treatments, it's really important for patients to sit down with their hematologist, pharmacist, nurse practitioner, the entire team to go over what treatment option is best for them.
Definitely. And can you talk a little bit about some side effects of these treatments and how best to deal with them?
Really good question, and really important for patients and their quality of life. As a sort of general approach to chemotherapy, I often tell patients that it's like the treatment, it's not a one size fits all, and different patients may experience different side effects depending on a lot of variations, like their own medical history and even genetic variations. And so what I tell patients is generally that fatigue is a common side effect of chemotherapy. And ways to deal with that is to listen to their body. And if you don't feel up to what it is that you have to do that day, you really need to take it easy and listen to your body when you're experiencing fatigue. Otherwise, the side effects are common, including things like nausea and vomiting. And fortunately, these days, we do have excellent therapies to try to avoid those side effects. So luckily, patients are a lot more comfortable with much less nausea and vomiting these days, thanks to many of our antiemetics. The other really important thing is our pharmacy and nursing team are often excellent at helping mitigate this. Otherwise, patients can experience things like diarrhea and constipation and other abnormalities of the GI tract, and we have ways around that as well. Dietary changes, activity modifications, and if we need to, we can use medications also to help deal with that. Otherwise, depending on what type of chemotherapy a patient gets, we know that there's a broad spectrum of side effects associated with each type of drug. And so when we set out on a patient's treatment plan, I'll often sit down with the patient and then they'll sit down with other members of the team to go over the specific side effects that are associated with their protocol, which are often organ specific. And so we'll sit down and talk about that with patients, and we may need to make dose modifications or treatment plan modifications to help to deal with those side effects, because the goal for patients is to go through this journey with the least amount of discomfort as possible. The other thing I tell patients is this is a lot of things to deal with, and oftentimes patients will underestimate the emotional distress that can be associated with not only the treatment, but also the diagnosis. This can also transcend down to caregivers. So I tell patients that they really need to take care of their mental health and the caregivers. We often see caregiver fatigue and burnout. And so it's really important for our patients to reach out if they are undergoing any kind of mental distress. They know they can reach us anytime. So I often tell patients that is something I see really commonly, that sometimes patients who have had no experience with mental health illness that they may experience throughout this journey as well.
When someone is being treated, is there something that they should be watching out for, that might indicate that they need to contact their physician right away?
Yeah, so that's a really good question as well. So the side effects we just talked about are sort of more subtle side effects or things that can often be dealt with at home or in combination with a phone call to us at the clinic. But what I tell patients that they really need to watch out for and when they need to either present to the emergency room or get in contact with the clinic very urgently in the daytime is if they have a fever. So if someone has a fever while undergoing therapy for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, I tell patients, you know, you can't take anything to mask the fever and you should go right to the emergency room to get checked out, because not infrequently our patients can get serious infections when your immune system is lowered while going through chemotherapy. The other thing that I tell them that they should always look out for and that wouldn't be normal would be signs and symptoms of blood clots, so deep vein thrombosis or pulmonary embolism. So if you have a sudden shortness of breath or pain in the chest that would be in keeping with a pulmonary embolism, they really need to go to the emergency room to be assessed. The signs of blood clots in the legs are quite varied and can be different from patient to patient, but I often tell patients if they have one leg or unilateral leg swelling with increased heat or swelling or redness, or even things like a Charlie horse feeling that doesn't go away, they should always go to the emergency room. And otherwise, anything outside of the pretty common side effects, like I talked about, fatigue, nausea, GI upset, some peripheral neuropathy, anything outside of the sort of typical thing that we go through in the clinic, I often tell patients that they should at least get in touch with the clinic. And if they are worried, always go to the emergency department to be assessed.
Yep, that's really important information. Thank you for sharing that. So you touched upon some of the short-term side effects of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma and the treatment that people may experience. But can you talk to us a little bit about some of the long-term effects of this type of lymphoma?
That's another really good question that patients often wonder about. So it depends on what type of chemotherapy radiation plan we have sort of embarked on with a patient. But generally, patients use a protocol that would involve certain chemotherapy agents that may have a small chance of organ damage. So I'll often tell patients that there is a small risk of things like a cardiomyopathy or a damage to the heart muscle that we would look out for, you know, more than a decade after chemotherapy. Otherwise, there is a slight risk as well of secondary cancers or other malignancies after one has completed chemotherapy for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. So after they're followed here in the clinic longitudinally, we'll often send back a letter to the primary care provider, be it a family doctor or a nurse practitioner, to continue to look out for their sort of entire health, including things like checking their blood counts at least yearly. If they've had radiation to the neck or chest, we need to continue to look at their thyroid function. And then a really important thing that I tell patients is that they really shouldn't smoke. Smoking is one of the things that we know is linked independently to other malignancies, and definitely in the patients who've undergone chemotherapy. So it is really important to stay active, to eat a healthy diet, limit alcohol, and to not smoke cigarettes to decrease the risk of some of these long-term side effects like heart disease, this cardiomyopathy, other malignancies, and just for their general health after you've undergone therapy.
Definitely, I think that's good advice for everybody. So to wrap us up a little bit, can you talk to us about what's happening in terms of research for diffuse large B-cell, how that's progressing? And is there any sort of good news that we can expect in the next, you know, couple years?
Yeah, so that's all really exciting. I've been practicing hematology just for the under a decade. And already I see in the last several years many advances in blood cancers, thanks to researchers across Canada and across the world. So it is really exciting to see the big changes. There are definitely therapies and clinical trials going on currently for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, which are exciting. There are many new monoclonal antibodies and antibody drug conjugates that are going on in clinical trials. I know some patients may have already had polatuzumab vedotin, which is a therapy we have used here in Newfoundland a couple of times, which is having very exciting results for patients with relapsed large cell lymphoma. So other than some monoclonal antibodies on the horizon and also some therapies that have been used traditionally in indolent lymphomas and CLL, some of these Brunton tyrosine kinase inhibitors, BTK, are also being used in clinical trials for more aggressive diffuse large B-cell lymphomas, which is preliminary, showing us some really, really interesting results. And then, of course, some things that many of our patients may have heard about is CAR T therapy, or chimeric antigen receptor therapy, has been up and coming throughout Canada and the United States as a therapy that is being used for relapsed refractory diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. So lots of exciting agents coming in the next 5 years, and already being used in practice in some places in Canada, but also in clinical trials. So I think the response rate to diffuse large B-cell lymphoma is already fairly well response rates, and I think that with the addition of a lot of these therapies, we'll actually see that the cure rate, or the overall response rate of our patients, hopefully skyrocket in the next few years. That's what we hope for.
Oh, well, that's wonderful to hear, and we definitely hope that too, and are very appreciative of our Canadian researchers. So that's fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Costello, for taking the time to talk with us today.
Oh, you're welcome. It was a pleasure.
So if listeners have any questions about diffuse large B-cell or need support navigating your own experience, I encourage you to connect with a community services manager in your region. You can visit bloodcancers.ca to connect with us. Until next time, stay well.
Thank you for listening to the Blood Cancer Experience podcast series by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. You can find us wherever you access your favorite podcasts, so be sure to subscribe and leave us a review. If you have an idea for the show, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email with your comments or suggestions to canadainfo@lls.org. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada is dedicated to funding cutting-edge research and supporting people affected by blood cancers. To learn more and access resources including fact sheets, booklets, and webcasts, visit llscanada.org.